All right, everyone, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Extra Rounds podcast. My name is Mike Dice.
I'm Elias.
Writes for Flow Combat and the UG, Fansided and Sports Illustrated. We are happy to talk all things MMA with you. First of all, we have, I'm going to mess up her name, so why don't you introduce her?
Yeah, I'll try not to mess it up. When we worked before, I have actually messed it up. I think it's Sanisa Estrada. Sanisa Superbad Estrada. She's fought twice this summer already. She was 2015's Ring Magazine Prospect of the Year. She was just named Fighter of the Month by Ring Magazine. She's one of the top prospects in all of boxing. She just moved to 10-0, hoping to fight again in September. She's phenomenal. We've done some work with her in the past, some stories. She's on the show. Miss Estrada, happy to have her on.
And Mike Santiago.
Yeah. So people that are don't follow like the local scene or some of the very, very top feeder leagues in MMA like RFA may not have heard of Mike, but Mike Santiago fights out of Team Top Notch here in the Chicago area, I think near Elmhurst, Illinois, a suburb of Chicago, and he just got a big fight. He's on an 8-fight winning streak, but he hasn't fought since I think June of 2016. Mike, he's been when I went in spent some time with Ricardo Lamas for a Flow Combat story before his last fight. We were in the gym with Mike, trained with him. He was desperate to get another fight. It had been so long. He got his fight, not just any fight. It's on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. It is fight week for Mike Santiago. He's fighting this coming Tuesday, less than a week away, and he's going to make some time to jump on the show as well.
Awesome. It's going to be an interesting show. We have Ms. Estrada calling in at 2:30. Then we'll talk to Mr. Santiago after that. But there's been a lot to talk about in the UFC the past week. We didn't do an episode last week because we're in this weird dead period of MMA, and there's not necessarily a whole lot going on. All attention seems to be focused on Mayweather-McGregor, but some things have happened, so let's run down the list. The big notable thing today, of course, is the 8-ounce gloves. Mm-hmm. The Nevada State Athletic Commission approved the request from both Mayweather and McGregor, though I think it was actually Mayweather who submitted the request and McGregor didn't object. His camp didn't object, I think, technically, if you want to get into the legalese of it all. So they will be fighting with 8-ounce gloves. First of all, I don't know, for those of you who don't really follow Nevada State Athletic Commission, this should not come as a surprise at all. Did you watch the proceedings?
I didn't. It's funny, I'm actually working on an investigative story involving the commission. I had my head in that the last week or two, and I didn't have time to watch these actual proceedings, so I missed it. Was it entertaining?
It was basically, I think, what you expect out of these things if you've watched them before. They cited a rule that's 10, 11 years old that stipulated different weight, why the gloves were for different weight classes, and they were supposed to do a scientific study to back up the decision for those rules when it happened, and they never got around to doing it, and that's one of the reasoning that they routinely cited in using in granting this exemption for this fight was that they had never followed through with the study. So one of the things they wanted was to keep the gloves. They said they would return them after, but they wanted to keep the gloves, both the ones they wore and prototypes for the fight so that they could do a study.
Yeah, they'll be studying
11 years
hard.
Late. But one of the things that I thought was...
study the gloves, not the brain. Yeah. Good Lord. Anyway, go on.
I mean, and they had a lot of rules about the gloves. They wanted to make sure that they used the same brand, of course.
Sure.
The team...
Sometimes that happens.
Right, because they want to make sure the padding's the same for both.
Are they going to use the same brands now or no?
Mayweather's camp was like, well, I don't think that's possible because they have different endorsement deals, but we will... Me and Leonard Ellaby and whoever will strive to... make sure the gloves are as identical as possible, despite being made from other brands. Well, that's a whole other topic. But what I thought was really interesting that they brought...
They're telling the regulators what they'll do.
Yeah, what I thought was also really interesting in the lead-up for this, or one of the commissioners brought this up, and it never dawned on me until he brought it up, and I feel like an idiot for this, is that they mention that there's not a weight glove stipulation or how many ounces a glove should be stipulation for weight classes for MMA.
No.
If you're a heavyweight fighting at 265 pounds, you're wearing 4-ounce gloves. And if you're a featherweight, if you're a strawweight fighting at 115 pounds, you're wearing 4-ounce gloves.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting that they've never considered adjusting based on weight class.
Yeah, it is interesting. The sizes and the gloves can be much different. You know, it's funny because it's definitely like a surprising thing. But then again, we also don't know in any way how or why it would impact anything, we just don't, because it might surprise most listeners to hear that, and then it might surprise them because they're thinking, hey, you know, the bigger guys can hit harder. We need to protect the head. Well, gloves don't protect the head ever. Gloves can help mitigate superficial, like, facial cuts and things like that. But the jarring impact on the brain from being rattled around, there's nothing that's ever been shown that's mitigated by a larger glove. If that were the case, we would have a lot less incidences of brain trauma in boxing over MMA. So super, it is interesting. The gloves do get bigger. You're right, Mike, but they don't necessarily they're not mandated to get heavier. And also, to me, that's fine, by the way. Let's not make rules based on science we don't have and assumptions we've, you know what I mean? Like, I'm okay with that. But yeah, it is interesting to think about. So much of what we have, as you just, great examples there with this boxing match coming up, and then in MMA with the UFC, are just examples of the promoters regulate themselves. There are some many, many holes in which we'd be surprised to realize how little actual regulation there is, how little, like, detailed procedure and process is mandated, and it's just kind of the promoters doing what they'd like, which is interesting because promoters already have a huge impact on the regulations that are made. A lot of times the real central like power figures and drivers of any type of move. So yeah, it is super interesting to think about it. I would be surprised, though, if we got, like, a real precise scale, if Brock Lesnar's, like, XXXXXL gloves that are bigger than Ronda Rousey's gloves, if they're not actually heavier. We know right. They don't have to be, but I'd be surprised if they're not. I don't know how things work. Like,
you would think they would have to be. You just think because so. the size.
Like the volume, yeah.
Even the padding to go across the knuckles.
You'd need different.
Like, would just be. It would. You'd have to make it thinner,
yeah,
to keep the weight
to keep
the same.
It down, right? Yeah, or different material.
So if it's consistent,
you'd think
between
be heavier,
the gloves, it would automatically be heavier, and that might be the case.
So. Yeah, right. We should grab some gloves like that and start weighing them.
Yeah,
and then I don't know what we do with that, but
we
should
just
do
go
it.
To the Target across the street. And
they have the official ones.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they have like the UFC or the they have Everlast or whatever.
That's right. They probably don't have Brock's size though.
Yeah, definitely not Brock's size. You probably have to special order those.
That's right.
They probably only make those every now and then.
Yeah.
Anyways, that was an interesting discussion. The exemption's been granted. There's a lot of discussion about whether this favors either fighter. Mm. I'm under the impression that it doesn't really make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could make an argument that it favors each fighter, in which case it's just null and void.
Mm.
What do you think?
I think it can very easily, glove size can have an impact in the fight. I don't know. I don't have a hard prediction of how it may affect this fight. There's going to be less coverage area, and I think the conventional wisdom or assumption might have been that Floyd would have preferred having more coverage because he's such a defensive fighter and he's going to tuck his chin, use the shoulder, and use the gloves when he can for coverage. But I guess maybe Floyd Jr.'s camp is looking to exploit Conor McGregor's defensive holes by giving him even less space. Of course, McGregor is used to fighting very small gloves. He's not used to boxing with them. He's not used to boxing a professional boxer with smaller gloves. And his chin is up a lot. His hands are down a lot. He relies on a lot of speed. So, I would say if I had to guess, Mike, I would think less defensive coverage available from gloves is going to favor or is going to work against the less technical boxer. And the less technical boxer, the less skilled boxer, the less experienced boxers by, I don't know, factors of 20 is clearly Conor McGregor. I don't think there's many things that could help Conor McGregor in this fight unless they made it kickboxing or MMA. But yeah, I don't know how it'll affect it. It's interesting to think about, though. It's not about like power of the punch. It's more about coverage, in my view.
Right. And I think that was one of the things that Mayweather's camp said, is that it's about, like, they made the case that it was Mayweather wanted the change for defensive reasons, which I thought was kind of interesting. You would think that would be counterintuitive,
yeah,
based on like logic,
right,
for somebody. But either way, it's been granted, and I think the whole big thing is this has just been a marketing ploy. It's just been another reason to like keep the conversation going, this thing going.
That could very well be true, man. That
and
makes
just
a lot
so
of sense.
Mayweather can say like, I had rules exempted to come and meet McGregor closer
right.
to his turf. But
yeah, that makes sense.
He's fought in 8-ounce gloves before, so it's not exactly like
he knows how to do it.
Unfamiliar territory for him.
Yeah, nothing's going to be unfamiliar in there for Floyd Mayweather on fight night. It will be a lot of unfamiliar stuff for Conor McGregor.
All right, well, I think that's enough Mayweather-McGregor talk. We'll get enough of that next week before we inundate you. Though I did want to take this moment to tease, and I'm sure Flow Combat has some stuff coming out that I'm fan-sighted. Tomorrow we are unveiling our preview. It's going to be a really cool template, unlike anything we've ever done for MMA. It's similar to templates we've used for things like our Game of Thrones preview and our Winter is Coming website. We used it recently on fansite.com for the soccer preview. So it'll be cool, but a little bit scaled down just because there's not as many moving parts.
That'll be fun.
In a fight between two people. But yeah, so look forward to that.
Nice. I can't wait to see that.
You guys have a preview coming?
I'm sure we do. I don't know exactly what Dwayne has coming down the pipe for this. I know we have an ongoing series of talking to striking coaches, expert strikers, to look at the fight. I've got my own coming out hopefully soon. We haven't nailed down the interview yet, so I won't say who I'm supposed to be talking to, but looking at McGregor, Mayweather through the lens of expert coaches that work with both boxers and MMA fighters in boxing. So we got that coming out. I'm sure they got something else. I'm sure they'll be doing a lot of fight night coverage. So yeah, by all means, switch back and forth between Fansided SI and Flow Combat. We'll have a lot of good stuff. But yeah, that sounds really cool. I can't wait to see that that preview. It sounds like it'll be pretty neat visually too.
It is. We got a cool logo that I just saw for the first time yesterday. Cool. I was pretty excited about. I get excited by those little things.
Yeah, that stuff matters.
You know. Anyways, getting back to the rest of the world of MMA, because there's a lot going on. Big news this week, Bellator signed Frank Mir. Initial reactions when you saw that?
It was better than him fighting in Chechnya under that dictator that he likes to hang out with and so many MMA fighters like to hang out with. If you don't know what I'm talking about, most people don't, but that's just a whole other story. We should probably take some time. We could try to have Mir on. I'm going to mispronounce his name. He's a fine reporter that's done most of the reporting on this stuff. We could maybe have him on as a guest. But, I think that's cool. I think it's cool. You know what? If you know how to pronounce his name, say it. I don't know how to say it. But
I think that's how you pronounce his first name.
Kareem.
I mean, I've only ever interacted with him in the digital space.
I've never spoken with him. Yeah, he's a good writer.
An HBO Sports.
That's right.
What's the name of that show?
Real Sports, is it?
Real, yeah.
Did they do
with
it?
With Brian Cumble, they do a segment, and they interview him about
it. Oh, that's good. So, I didn't realize. Hopefully they did a good job in it. They do a really bad job usually with MMA, but hopefully this is better. I'm sure they were really excited to do anything negative on MMA. But this is truly a weird thing. There's a lot of weird stuff going on with the Chechen people, and then some autocratic families in the UAE as well that are these big benefactors of MMA and grappling and stuff. So it's kind of crazy. But anyway, we'll talk about that more at some point. But yeah, I mean, you know, I like Frank Mir a lot. He's one of my favorite fighters ever, really, to watch. And if he wants to continue fighting and he's able to now, then I'm happy for him. I hope he gets good matchups and it's not like he's not fighting every 23-year-old, 260-pound kid that's out there. But if he wants to fight and he's healthy, I hope, relatively healthy, I hope I hope he has a good time. I'd love to see him compete. There's some fun matchups there.
There's definitely like a lot of people in his age range there, though. Mitrione's like 39.
Right.
Roy Nelson, they just signed.
Yeah.
There's a lot of these names.
Do they still have Chicago? He's fought Chicago before.
I think so.
It's a bunch of UFC fighters.
Fedor.
Yeah.
But, so it's interesting. And this is a division with no title. But, you know, everybody jokes about this senior circuit tour thing, and I think Belfort was calling for a legends division or something at one point. Like,
worse
it's essentially what it's become.
Yeah.
Now, I think there's a certain strategy to what Bellator is doing. I think they get mislabeled as this like senior division, but that's not what they're trying to do. They're using the name.
Yeah. They're not
to
excited
draw
about
attention to their younger.
Yeah, they're not excited
fighters.
That they're old guys. They're excited that they're big names.
Yeah, they're like, well, this guy. People are going to tune in to watch Frank Mir for free.
Yeah.
Hopefully, they check out this guy we're going to put in the co-main,
right?
Like a Michael Chandler, and a Manuel Sanchez, or somebody you know that we can kind of use his name to buoy these guys. And I think there's, you know, if these guys want to keep fighting, then
they're going to fight somewhere,
right?
And, you know, Frank Mir's a great fighter for sure. I just, you know. We'll see. So we'll see how much reflexive speed he's got left. But I definitely love watching him compete. I'd love to see him do jiu-jitsu. I've interviewed him before. And he said when he retires, he'd love to do like jiu-jitsu submission grappling tournaments only. That's something he can compete at for a long time. You've got a lot of former fighters or even current fighters that kind of veered back into that. You got a guy like Dean Lister when he retired from MMA, went back into submission grappling, which is what gave him his big name in MMA to begin with, and he's stayed to a relatively advanced age, stayed really elite. So I'd love to see Frank Mir grapple full-time, but I think he likes to hit people too, so I don't blame him for wanting to fight on. And I bet they're not paying him a little bit of money either. If you can do the thing you love for a lot of money, it's hard to say no.
The interesting thing will be to see if they bring back the heavyweight title. They've been without a heavyweight title for a while now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, you bring in all these big names from UFC, Roy Nelson, Frank Mir, Matt Mitrione, and then you, of course, bring in Fedor. I think it's just, you know.
Yeah,
what are you gonna do? So maybe that brings resolution. As we move on, I did want to mention that Conor McGregor, in case you're unfamiliar with that name, released a comment on the State Athletic Commission's decision today that I figured I would read.
Yeah.
Basically just says, I am very pleased with the commission's handling of my next bout today. Fair play was kept all the way through.
Well, they're both satisfied.
This
then.
Was handled very well and very fairly by the Nevada State Athletic Commission. I am very pleased and respect the commission's ruling on this 10 days until fight time. This is a man who once promised to never fight in Nevada.
Yeah, yeah. He's trying to make sure. There's a lot of funny business. And maybe if he gets, if he does the, he does the, he does the boxing match of his life, he'll go to a decision, and he'd love not to get, you know, tricky business thrown his way in that regard. So I guess he's just trying to be act nice and make nice with the commission, and I'm sure he feels happy with it. So that's interesting.
Now let's talk about more MMA.
Yeah.
Michael Bisping, Georges St-Pierre, set to fight Madison Square Garden, presumably the main event. Huge fight, worthy of anchoring a big event there.
Definitely.
The big tidbit of news this week was that Georges St-Pierre is contractually stipulated to defend the title if he were to defend Michael Bisping. And he says,
let's please talk about that, yeah.
And he says that that defense would be against Robert Whittaker, the interim title, who will not be Michael Bisping's next opponent in a unification bout.
Right.
Whole separate topic.
Yeah, right, right.
Michael Bisping, on his podcast, said that he doesn't think that that stipulation really means anything because Bisping, or not Bisping, St-Pierre could retire.
Right.
And essentially only come out of retirement for a certain fight.
He's right. That means it's completely unenforceable. He could. There's no way you can compel another man to fight another person short of, for a period of time, short of slavery. The UFC already has issues, I think, if anyone ever challenges them, with the requirements they put on people in terms of exclusivity, because they say these fighters are independent contractors, yet they don't have the freedom that independent contractors usually enjoy. They have types of responsibilities that full employees have placed on them. So you can make an argument for exclusivity. They can say, if you fight anywhere, it's going to be with us. I still think that's shifty ground, given that the UFC maintains that these people are independent contractors, and they avoid, I'm sure, a lot of taxes for that reason. But yeah, to say, what are they going to say? What if he breaks his hip? He's in a hospital bed. Oh yeah, sorry, you said you were going to fight again. We're just conscripting you. And like, this is ancient Rome or something. Now you're a gladiator. That would be gross if it were enforceable, and I can't imagine it is enforceable. So it's just weird. They have a weird way of looking at things, a weird possessive chattel way of looking at fighters. But there's no way that would be enforceable. I don't know the details of what they're saying. Maybe they're saying if you fight again, it has to be for the middleweight title. I even think that would be hard to enforce. These are independent contractors, according to the UFC. I just don't see how that could happen. They could wield soft power. They can hassle you. They can throw you under the bus the way Dana White does with a lot of fighters, the way he's done with Georges St-Pierre. They can put some carrots in front of you, but I don't see how they can make it happen. I think Michael Bisping and I just found something to agree on. That's meaningless. The clause, it would seem to be. I haven't read it, but it would seem to be.
Well, we have Titan FC 2-8 champion Jose Shorty Torres in the comments. He says hi. He said, predicts Floyd wins by decision no matter what glove size it is. And about Georges St-Pierre, he says he will wreck Bisping, and he's saying it'll be a wrestling match for 25 minutes. He also added that the UFC is extremely political and only wants fights for money instead of who's next.
Mm-hmm.
A very reasonable point.
Yeah, it's correct.
If you're setting up a champ, if St-Pierre wants to go fight Tyron Woodley at welterweight, and it's a champion versus champion fight, you'd have to think that they would jump all over that.
Yeah.
And sorry, Robert Whittaker.
Right.
And in this case, no need to create an interim title weight champion while you pursue titles outside of your weight division, because there's already one, and he can defend that.
That's right. That's right.
And for those of you who are unfamiliar with Jose Shorty Torres, he's got an interesting situation that we could talk about. He's 5-6-0 in Titan, flyweight champion, bantamweight champion, and you would think his next shot would be in the UFC, but he hasn't gotten the call yet. You'd imagine it would have to be coming soon. But what's your take on the straw on the feet? And I'm thinking, if I'm remembering correctly from watching some some of his social media that he's they want him to come in through the UFC through a different way. I don't want to say it if I'm wrong and I'm making this up, as opposed to like just getting a bout agreement and fighting. But what is your take on this?
Well, I think Jose will get a shot in the UFC as soon as he's healthy. Last time he was here, he was nursing a pretty banged up hand that he hurt beating up on someone. So it's about the best injury you can get after a win, hurting someone so badly with your fist that it hurts your bone and you get the win. No, I think Jose will get in there. I don't know. I'm not. You know, we're not talking with him and his manager about the latest developments. I think it all just comes down to timing, Mike. I think, you know, I would imagine it will follow the path that most fighters that can get to the UFC path follows. We've talked, you know, there's all sorts of people. I remember just following the sport and covering the sport and being in the sport for so many years. You see these types of things. You see people who now have been in the UFC like for like 12 consecutive years or 10 consecutive years. And they got in just by getting the call, but they also tried first to get in another way. You got a guy like Clay Guida. Clay Guida was fighting in the UFC. He got a call once they brought back the lightweight division over 10 years ago. Got the call. He was a major a Midwest prospect. He'd fought internationally, fought out west in Strikeforce, beat Josh Thompson, longtime top five dude. But they first try to get him in the Ultimate Fighter, I think, or later try to get him in the Ultimate Fighter after he'd already fought in the UFC. So you never know the call you get. You can get a short notice call to fill in against someone. You can be asked to go through the Contender Series, maybe, whatever that is. We're going to try to get a little clarity on that from Mike Santiago today, although won't bug him too much because he's got fight week. I don't want to go too detailed into that. You can have Ultimate Fighter. So I think it all depends on the timing. But I'm sure that the UFC has already called Shorty. It just depends on the timing, when he's healthy and what opportunities around. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a short notice opponent, or it's this or that, and it's not going to be, hey, Shorty, here's 3 months to prepare for someone. It's not going to be, they're not going to treat you like a professional. They're going to treat you like an asset that they can exploit and given their needs at any given moment. That's just what's going to happen. They're not going to say, hey, here's a great contract, here's a stipend, here's some developmental money, we're going to give you 2 months of man's notice and this opponent, blah, blah, blah. No, it'll be something. It'll be something quick, it'll be something fast, or it'll be something at a weird time. But he'll get the call, and he'll I'm sure if he's interested, he'll accept that call. It just has to be when he's healthy and when something opens up for him.
Yeah, and he's always training, so I think when he does get the call, it wouldn't catch him off guard as much to have to do a fight in short notice. Like, he trains with TJ Dillashaw for his fights constantly. He's always working as a partner through people's camp. So, well, of course, when he's healthy.
Right. No, most fighters are aware. The only fighters that really don't prepare for that call, like prospects that don't prepare for that call and be ready to fight kind of at any moment, I mean, are prospects, like, you know, or it's someone that's super established and has the luxury of having enough money to get out of shape in between camps or something. Like most other guys and girls, they know if they're and the cusp, they know that they pretty much have to be ready. They know that they're going to get a call to fly to Japan on a 10 days notice and cut 20 pounds and fight someone. They know how that comes. Charles Rosa has been on the show. He knows how that came for him. Had to go to Europe on short notice to fight Dennis Seaver. Like, that's just the way it happens. So most people, readiness is a spectrum, right? But most of these prospects, they know that that's the call they're going to get and the way they're going to get it if they get it. So they have it in their head that they will just need to drop everything if they want to take that.
Yeah. There is another way for prospects to get into the UFC right now, which we haven't really talked about as much on the show, but it's becoming immensely popular, I feel like. And because one of our guests is on it, we might as well talk about it now. The Dana White Contender Series.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess we have talked about it in reference to Snoop.
Right.
But I think people are getting people are really kind of embracing this in a way that that feel like they would hope that people would still embrace the Ultimate Fighter. Like there's a lot of interest and hype around this Contender Series and what's happening.
Yeah.
What's your take of it?
There is. We're going to see if it's warranted or not. I mean, the fighters are going to make great fights, but the implicit, unspoken promise that this is a path towards the UFC is something that if you actually read the fine print, the show and the UFC goes out of its way to say this is not necessarily a path to anything. It's a separate promotion. Dana White has the best. We're talking about bad contracts. Dana White has the best contract in the world where he can be a promoter for the UFC and still get his own promoter's license to do something else. It's broadcast and UFC Fight Pass, but there is no structured, formalized path to the UFC from it. You're not. If you win there, you're not signed to the UFC necessarily.
That's just right. Only two people get signed.
That's just not the way it necessarily works. You know, they have like what five or six people or fights on this upcoming card. So yeah, if a lot of people, don't get signed from this, don't get any contract from this, I don't know if the excitement will continue, because I think it's all largely based on the idea that people are going for a shot at the UFC. And if those shots don't pan out, even if you win, then maybe people will only be as excited as they are to watch any good fight. And they always have good fighters on there. They have really good prospects on there all the time. People that probably should already be in the UFC. Like a guy like Manny Santiago, all his fights, he could arguably already gotten a shot a long time ago. So I think it's interesting. I love the fights. I just don't like the uncertainty that these guys and gals face, or now just guys. Have there ever even been any women on the show yet? Hopefully soon. I don't know on this upcoming card if there are, but hopefully at some point.
I don't know. No. I haven't really watched it as closely as other people. I've been busy.
Too busy for that. But, too busy being a newlywed.
Yeah. Amongst other things, travel things, we were in Montreal this weekend.
Very cool.
We'll talk about that later. But yeah, it seems like there's a lot of interest and a lot of hype. They do have the ability to kind of do whatever they want in that space. But I think it's interesting. It's like you get like the Ultimate Fighter fight feel with like, 'cause they're in the gym and it's like small and it's like, and then each person competing has like their group of supporters. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really kind of compelling from what I've seen.
It's good TV. I like it. Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, they're trying new things, and I guess that's something to be happy about.
Yeah, I like the creative part of it. That's for sure. Should we get my phone? I don't know what time it is. No. I like the creative part of it. That's for sure. I think it's just like a weird situation where we don't know what happens with the folks there. But yeah, no, I love the concept. I always like watching prospects. That's a tradition that MMA fans. Thank you, sir. Need to
support
more.
Your local MMA show.
Oh, that's for sure.
I think that's like the best way for UFC fans.
Oh, that's for
MMA
sure,
MMA fans in general to do it. I know I haven't gotten to go to as many in the Chicago area as I wanted to. Mm-hmm. The XFO is a big one here. Hoosier Fight Club. Those are both interesting. But, you know, the grappling tournament you went to, I think, was really fascinating. The production was higher than I think people expect.
And that was a national promotion. They tour every week. They're in a different city. Fight to Win is kind of crazy in that regard. It's like you're in the WWE.
The other thing that, like, if you're an MMA fan, like, you go, like, at that fight in particular, you have, like, Mike Biggie Rhodes walking around, who's a Bellator fighter. You have CM Punk walking around.
Competed
you
on
have
it. Biggie was
a
on the
lot
card.
Of Rufus Sport. Yeah, he competed on the card. A lot of the fighters who competed on the card were walking around. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's just an accessibility there that I think there isn't.
A UFC retired former UFC fighter who headlined the car, Jeff Curran. Like, it's kind of cool, you know? Yeah. Let's see. All right. Let's give Sunisa a call if you're ready, Mike. It's about that time. She just texted us. So if you're just joining us.
Gotta put the headphones in and lock in.
What's that?
Gotta put the headphones on and lock in.
Did
you turn them on?
This is as close to an astronaut as ever been. Is it on?
Oh, as close to an astronaut as you've ever been.
There's a switch on these fancy guy headphones.
For those of you listening who aren't watching, and by the way, you can watch on the Sports Illustrated MMA Facebook page every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central. We've changed our setup. We used to sit at a desk. We decided to make it more of a lounge feel, which, by the way, when we get some Chicago fighters in, we can bust out the couch on the side for us, and then they can be in the hot seat.
Absolutely.
So we still have more changes to make, but
we can sit on the couch and they can lay across our lap.
Yeah,
or, you know, something cool.
We made it very lounge. We got more comfortable chairs, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're about to call Sunisa Estrada. That's a pro boxer. She just was named Boxer of the Month by Ring Magazine. She's a former Prospect of the Year in 2015 for Ring Magazine. She's one of the top prospects in all of boxing. She fought twice this summer, hopefully fighting again September 9th. And We're excited to have her on. I don't think we've had her on here before, but I get confused because I've interviewed her before and like done some video shoots. She's pretty great.
So. You know, when you're like almost 60 episodes in or over 60 episodes in, you get confused. It's hard to keep track.
Living legends, you know, it's tough. All right, let's see. I'll give her a ring now. She might have stepped away.
Hello.
Sunisa, this is Elias. I'm here with my co-host, Mike. Thanks for being on the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've been a long time since I've chatted with you, man, and you've also won a bunch of fights since last personally got to talk with you. Congratulations on that. Congratulations on being named Fighter of the Month recently at Ring Magazine. You've been on a red them before. In 2015, you were the Prospect of the Year. What do they mean to you? Is it do you take away something from them? Do you try to ignore them? And you know, like, what does it do for you when you get this type of well warranted and well deserved attention?
It just definitely motivates me. I mean, being Prospect of the Year was great, and I just wanted to continue to improve and continue to put on great fights. And being named Fighter of the Month was great. I fought in June. I was back from a 9-month layoff, and I won with a 38-second knockout in the first round. And then I fought about 3 weeks later in July and won a 6-round unanimous decision. And now I'm back in the ring September 9th on the Chocolatito undercard. Yeah, it just definitely motivates me to just stay in the gym and keep busy and keep putting on great fights. So that way, one day soon, I'll be Fighter of the Year for Ring Magazine.
Do you know who you're fighting?
That's definitely one of my goals.
Nah, then you're on pace to hit it. Do you know who you're fighting yet for September 9th, or are you just starting the camp and waiting?
Just waiting. I should know very soon.
Cool. You know, I just from past conversations and, you know, over the last couple of years, I know that happens a lot, right? Like, you get the date and you commit to it and you start training, but you don't yet know who you're going to be fighting. You got to find your opponent. And we've spoken a lot, over time about how it can be really challenging sometimes to get an opponent for you, for female fighters a lot of times in particular. How do you approach your training when you know that fights can be hard? To come by, someone might drop out, or you have to start training before you know who you're going to be fighting in particular. Is it more about focusing on yourself and rather than like on the traits or tendencies of a particular opponent at that point?
Yeah, it's definitely just focusing on myself and making sure that I'm prepared mentally and physically and just staying in the gym because it happens all the time. For men, it happens with men all the time, you know, opponents change or last minute you find out who you're fighting. But for women, it's even worse because there's not too many options. So what I do is I stay in the gym every day. Even when my 9-month layoff, I was in the gym. Even though I didn't have any fights coming up, I was still going to the gym at least 4 times a week. Just because there's so many things to work on and there's so many things that I always want to improve on because I'm just so competitive and I just want to be the best. So I always stay in the gym and, I get frustrating and difficult at times because opponents change. And I would say probably 8 out of my 10 fights, I've had to fight bigger opponents at heavier weight classes, and that's because there was no other options or it was last minute, and of course I want to fight, so I don't want to pass up a good opportunity such as fighting on big undercards, and so I would just take fights, even if it wasn't an opponent who I wanted at the time, I had to do it anyway because it was a great opportunity, and I knew I would win, which is why you should always stay physically prepared in case anything happens like that.
Mike Dice here. Hey, what you're talking about is something I think a lot of female boxers in the past have mentioned. Holly Holm comes to mind and why they eventually go to MMA. Is that something that's ever crossed your mind or something that you've considered when you see how, I don't want to say easier, but it seems women's MMA is better set up?
My mind, it has. Not gonna lie about that. It's definitely more exposure in MMA right now, but women's boxing has come a long way, and There's actually top promoters who are now signing females and top promoters who are putting women on, such as myself, on big undercards. And it's come a long way, and it's getting very popular, and doors are starting to open. And I feel like there's just so much that I want to accomplish in boxing, and I want to accomplish that first in boxing, then maybe think about going to MMA and see what they're doing.
So this shouldn't come as any surprise because of your skill level and your trajectory and what you've done so far. But, you know, we were hearing some rumors that you're gunning for the longtime champ of your division, WBA champ, and also one of the top pound-for-pound boxers in the world, Jessica Bopp. Is that a fight that you feel like, hey, if and whenever it gets offered, I'm down for it? Is it something that's in your, you know, in your mind for the kind of like a middle road, a little bit off into the future? And you know, either way, why do you like that fight in particular, if you do?
Yeah, it's definitely in my mind and something I want to do maybe in a few fights from now. And that's the fight that I want because she's the longest reigning champion at my weight class. So if I'm going to fight for a title and take someone's title, I want it to be somebody who is recognized and somebody who's had the title for so long and nobody has been able to take it. So I want to be the one to do it. And I just want it to be on the right stage and for the right money, of course. And I want people to see it. I want it to be televised. I don't want to fight for a title like a lot of female fighters have to do where nobody knows that they're even fighting for a title. Nobody sees it. I want to change the sport in that way to where when I fight for a title, people, you know, are able to see the fight and the world able to see it because we both deserve to be seen.
Now, Mike touched on this earlier with you, and he was asking about MMA. Now, we know that you've worked with MMA fighters and helped them out with sparring and things like that over the past couple years. We were earlier in the episode talking about this Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather boxing match that's happening. So just having an expert on like yourself, kind of curious. I mean, how out of your realm, how out of their realm do you think, Sunisa, like MMA fighters are in a boxing match, and how out of their realm would a boxer, just without like extra training and years of training, would they be just in an MMA fight with an experienced MMA fighter?
I think it's just from experience in sparring a lot of MMA fighters. I think when they get in there, and there's, of course, in MMA, there's more options to win. In boxing, it's just using your hands. So, you're very limited. And I don't think MMA fighters or McGregor really realize that until they step into the ring and they're like, man, you know, the only options that I have are my right hand and my left hand. They can't kick, can't take you to the ground. And I'm a fan of both of them, but I think Mayweather's going to definitely win. And I think that's because McGregor's going to have limited options. So it's going to be a lot of strain on his brain, I think, mentally. And that's going to wear him down physically throughout the round. And it might go the distance. And if there's a stoppage, I think that Floyd will stop him in the later round because, like I said, McGregor will wear down little by little as the rounds go on, just from missing punches, so he's not going to be used to that. And just mentally, I think it'll be a lot of just strain on his brain and just wear him down.
That's super interesting. Talking about being mentally exhausted, both fighters, both camps are promising like this action-packed fight. Now McGregor obviously is known for TKOs and knockouts and stuff like that in MMA. We've talked about this on the show before, Sinise, and I'm of the opinion that if Conor McGregor's smart, he's going to try to fight the most boring fight of his life because he wants to make it the distance and that'll look good. And he's fighting a counterfighter, conservative, especially at this point in his career, conservative counterfighter in Floyd Mayweather, who has low punch output. Do you think that there's any chance that this is actually like some rock'em sock'em fight, or do you imagine both men are going to be pretty cautious out there?
You know, I think they will be pretty cautious, and I think McGregor is going to go in there very cautious. He might try to be a little more active in the beginning round, just because, you know, he's not tired and he feels like he has the conditioning. But I think little by little, he'll start to get pop shot by Mayweather, and it'll make him more cautious, and he'll back up a little more, which would be better for Mayweather. But yeah, I think I don't see like an action-packed fight either.
The only thing that I can think of, and we've also talked about in the show too, that might work against Floyd Mayweather in this fight, and would love your take on it, is if Floyd at Junior at his age and being out of the ring for so long in this past most recent retirement is just, you know, gets old enough where his reflexes have slowed down enough where he gets caught by something he wouldn't ordinarily have been caught by, or if he's really, really rusty or something to that effect, and McGregor is just a more active guy right now. Obviously, you're a super young fighter yourself, so you don't know what it's like to grow old yet. But you've dealt with longer periods of time between fights, like we've talked about, than you wanted to. Like this before this summer, it was 9 months. I mean, how is there any chance that that's going to be a factor against Floyd? Just the inactivity in your mind, based on your experiences with what that does to you?
Yeah, that can definitely be a factor because he is a lot older now and he's been off for a while, so I'm sure there's some ring rust that he's definitely going to feel. But like I said, his experience will probably take over, and just because he's been doing this for all of his life, I think it'll make it look a little easier, even though he'll be a little rusty in there. And I saw the McGregor video sparring Paulie.
Yeah, what do you make of that? The edited video that's put out there.
We don't know what the rest of the rounds look like. Yeah. Maybe Paulie was tagging him a bit, but from the video that I did see and the video that's out there, Paulie is—he's out of shape. I mean, he's a great commentator. He's commentating for Showtime, and I'm sure he's not in the gym training, because just from the looks of his body, physically, he didn't look like he was in shape at all. Mm-hmm. So no matter how, Paulie's a very talented boxer, but no matter how talented you are, if you're not in shape, you're going to get tagged with punches. But that doesn't have me fooled as to how McGregor is going to do just because he was landing those punches against Paulie. I mean, Paulie was totally out of shape. Mayweather's going to go in there in shape and 100% ready.
Now, you said you saw the video of the Paulie sparring thing. Did you watch any of McGregor's open workout? And as a boxer, if you did, what do you make of his striking abilities that he showed off?
A lot of moving around, a lot of dancing around. I'm sure he'll do that in the ring just to entertain people. But I don't think that's going to get him to land the punches that he needs to land.
You're not buying into the angles?
No, it's more difficult than, I'm sure it's more difficult. Well, it is more difficult than he thinks it is. Because you might be able to, you know, give angles and stuff, but if you're not throwing any punches off of that, then you're not gonna score any points. And Floyd has great timing, so I'm sure he's gonna watch his little movements and just counter. And McGregor has never been hit consistently with punches. And in boxing, it's all about consistency and all about being accurate and having timing. And we haven't seen that from McGregor yet, so we'll see. Should be interesting.
Well, Sunisa, we want to thank you for your time. We'll let you go now, but when that opponent gets announced, we're going to bug you. I'd love to have you on again before you fight once again September 9th. Congrats on your success already this summer. We know you're going to continue doing well. Where can folks follow you and your training and your career more on social media?
You can follow me on social media on Instagram at Sunisa_Superbad or Twitter Sunisa_Superbad, or like my Facebook fan page, Sunisa Estrada.
Awesome. Well, Ms. Estrada, thank you so much for being on the show. We really appreciate your time and your expertise. Thanks for chopping it up. Best of luck. We'll talk with you soon.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Looking forward to the next time.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Take care. Thank you. Bye. You too.
That was fun. I love having the folks break down. This is like, there's two ways that this fight is interesting to me, Mayweather McGregor. Only two ways. One's technical, because anything's interesting technically if you look at it, right? So I love having actual experts break it down like she did. And the other stuff is the regulatory disaster that this fight is, which we've talked about a little bit. But I love, on the positive side, when I'm not saying what a bad, dumb fight this is, it's basically, let's look at this fight. Let's look at the let's evaluate. We're getting a lot of stream of promotion of stuff, material being leaked, comments being made. All right, here in Extra Rounds, we get experts. They look at it and break it down dispassionately from an actual informed way. And that's fun for me. So we'll talk about this fight all the time, and we do. But we try to do it from like a little bit of a more informed perspective. So that was really cool of her to talk, in addition to herself, about herself, to talk about this other fight. Because I know everyone's getting questions about this fight, and I'm sure they're all getting sick of it because they all have their own lives. So that was nice of her to chat. But, yeah.
Yeah, I imagine everybody in combat sports is getting sick of being asked about it. But they do present unique analysis. You know, like, we can sit here and offer our analysis, but, you know, a professional boxer,
way more. I think,
offers insight that we could never provide.
Absolutely, absolutely. So,
but only on certain things.
That's right. We only on certain things. Only on fight things. When it comes to tater tots, I got them. I got that top.
Don't even get me started on tater tots.
So you want to get the second Mike on the show today? He says he's ready. He just
texted us. Let's
welcome
Mike to the Mike Show.
Let's go. Give him a ring now. We're calling Mike Santiago, who's got a fight on Tuesday, on the Tuesday Night Contender Series. Dana
22nd.
White's, yeah, that's right, August 22nd. Thanks, on UFC Fight Pass. He's a Chicago area fighter out of Team Top Notch. And our
fighting Mark Chirico.
That's right, who I don't know too much about. I'm going to ask. We got to ask him how much he knows about him. Maybe you should. He's a teammate of Mike Santiago, is of Ricardo Lamas, who recently fought and won. All right, here we go. Let's see if he picks up. Mike, this is Elias. You're on the Extra Rounds podcast. I'm here with my co-host, the first Mike on the show. We were just joking. We're about to have the second Mike on the show, Mike Dice. So thanks for being on, brother.
Man, thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, absolutely, man. So we were just chatting. We were talking about it earlier. You've got your next fight, August 22nd, on Dana White's Tuesday Night Fight Contender Series on UFC Fight Pass. When I met you, which is just earlier this summer, we met for the first time. I'd seen you around in fights, obviously. You've got even though you're a young man, you have a long and a really established career.
Absolutely.
You were talking about looking for another fight. You hadn't fought since, I think, June of 2016. You're on an 8-fight win streak. How frustrating was that for you to go so long without a fight? And how did it feel to finally get not just a fight, but something that's going to be on Fight Pass, something that's getting a lot of attention like this Contender Series?
Right, man. You know, I like to stay active. You can look at my record and my resume, and you know, I don't like to take too much time in between fights. You know, I kind of get like a anxious feeling. I start to get anxiety if I don't do something like outside the gym. You know, like whether it is you know, an MMA fight, or you know, I've done pro boxing and pro kickboxing or jiu-jitsu tournaments. You know, so I like to stay as active as possible. And when I start to get that little itch, that anxiety feeling about, you know, not being able to compete when I want to, you know, I let my trainer, Mac, I let him hear it, you know. But, yeah. And he's just like, settle down, bro. Settle down, you know. Chill out. You're good. We got something. Just wait it out, you know. Something big will come. And then I actually had a fight scheduled for Hoosier Fight Club to defend my lightweight title in September. And then literally like a day or two later, I get the call for this Contender Series. And I was like, wow. Yeah, so I'm not going to fight that HFC fight anymore.
How did they take that?
Yeah.
Well, you know, he's been telling me since, because I am a 2-division champion for them. I was their 145 champion first. And then I wanted to wait a little bit, you know, for maybe a big call. And I got that anxious feeling. I was like, you know what, let's just schedule me something and get me right back in there, you know, because I've been coming out of my last about 10 fights scratch-free, you know. So I can get right back into training, you know, no time off, you know, right back into the gym, right back into the swing of things. And when I got that call, like, well, only we knew about it, or we thought we were the only ones who knew about it. They're like, don't announce it yet. We'll announce it when it's official, when contracts are signed. And the promoter actually texted Mac and was like, what? He got the call? What? And we were like, how the heck does this guy already know? Like, we just found out. So he's like, well, we're excited. You know, he put a squash on the contract for the fight, found another guy to fight for the lightweight title for that main event card. And him, Paul, and Danielle Vale, they're actually coming out there to watch that contender fight. They're like, you know, we want to, you know, support our champion. So that's pretty cool then.
That is cool. It from the outside looking in, Mike, it's kind of confusing, or I'll just speak for myself. It's kind of confusing for me to know as of now, like, what the situation is with the Contender Series. Like, it's separate from the UFC. It's obviously being broadcast by the UFC. It has the UFC's president's name on it. Like you just mentioned, like, oh, he got the call. Is that how it feels right now? The call? How's it been explained to you in terms of what the opportunity is?
Yeah, for me, yeah, this is it, really. This basically is basically the biggest job interview of my life, you know. So I got to go out there and I just have to impress them, you know. I know they see my record. I know they see the guys that I've been facing my entire career, not just these last 10 in a row. And I was out there with Lamas, his last fight in Anaheim, and they finally got to put a face to the name, you know. So I know they know who I am now. And, you know, it's a great feeling to be in front of them because, you know, you got all the UFC owners, you got the matchmakers, you got everyone there that is there to make the decision whether they want to sign you to the UFC or not. Mm-hmm. You know, so, yeah, so I really, I'm really planning to show up for that fight, I'll tell you that.
Now, I don't know exactly when you guys got the word. Like you said, you weren't able to announce it right away. But it's a short. It's not like a long camp. You don't have like some GSP 3-month camp or something. In the middle of that really, really short camp, you also had to go out to Vegas to do promotional stuff. What was that experience like? Was it disruptive to your schedule, or was it a good, interesting, and worthwhile experience for you to do that?
Well, yeah. I think it was about four or 5 weeks. I got the call from next week. But I was already training hard. You know, we had guys with fights coming up, so I'm always in the gym, you know, training hard. It might not be for a fight, but I knew that either I was going to have a fight scheduled, just a random fight, or I was going to get this call very soon. I felt it. I can feel it. You know, so I was in the gym, training hard, grinding my days out. And, I had to go to Vegas to do the promo stuff. And we actually got to go to the UFC Performance Institute. Mm. That was amazing. That place is it's a playground for all of us fighters. I mean, they literally have everything. Everything. It's just a giant gym, like two stories. You got your strength conditioning, like it's the whole bottom level strength conditioning. You have a cafeteria, you got a locker room. Yeah, you got everything, but it's huge place, man. They got all their production crews, all the UFC employees are based out of there. And to go through that whole process was amazing, man. You know, it opens my eyes to show me what's to come, you know.
I'm going to ask you. We talked about it. Both of us, all of us here, have talked a little bit already in passing about this current really long and impressive win streak you're on. Now, sometimes you know things just they go a certain way. We don't have any type of real control, even if we want to, even if we do all we can to prepare for a competition or a fight. But sometimes there's turning points in a life or in a career, whether it's a mindset or you know, breakthrough with technique or any number of stuff. Does this win streak in your mind, Mike, when you think about it, is it the result of some type of corner that you turned, that you feel you turned in your progress in any way? Like, do you feel like you're a much improved compared to maybe before 2014 when this current streak started?
Absolutely, man. You know, before this whole streak started, I had like a Mac, he would call it the three fight curse. He's like, bro, it's the third fight, you know, like I'd win two and then my third one, something would always happen, something would go wrong, but that would always be in my head. So I would constantly think about that, like, oh shit, it's the third fight, damn, you know. But at the end of the day, like, that's just me trying to like beat myself up about that. Like, I was like, I know there ain't no damn curse. You know, like this is just a prefabricated thought that's in my head about this. And so as soon as I threw that out the window and I really started to change my routine, you know, because all my losses have in earlier in my career were all submission. You know, I wasn't putting the time in to my ground game and my grappling, strictly grappling, not just grappling for MMA. You know, so I found Alliance Jiu-Jitsu under Jason Sullins out of Schaumburg.
Yeah, yeah, great team.
Yeah, great team, and I love it. And he fits my style so well, and he's got so many high-level guys over there that have helped me out. And that was definitely one of the turning points. But, you know, just coming to – I'm 28. I just turned 28 the end of July, and – you know, I'm coming into my physical prime of my life right now, and not just physical, but mental as well. You know, I'm starting to believe in myself how I would just say I did, you know, back in the day before 2014. Like, I'd talk a big game, and then something would happen, and I'd have a double downfall. I'd, you know, lose a couple fights or something. But now that I know that I work harder than anybody, you know, and I work just as hard as these champions in the UFC, you know, that's why I know I can hang with these guys. I'm not just a contender, you know, in my head. I know for a fact that I can hang with the best guys in the world, you know, so for me to think that way and for me to believe it and see it happening through these last 10 fights, it's just going to keep going. And I'm not going to stop. And it's going to be really hard for people who step across from me in that cage. And I don't care. I don't really care who it is. You know, it's going to be hard for anybody to beat me right now.
Now, you fought in multiple promotions, and, you know, you have a lot of experience fighting under different banners. Does this experience kind of give you an edge over your opponent who's mainly fought only in one promotion in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I think so. Because, you know, I've, like you said, I fought everywhere. You know, I fought in big promotions, RFA, Ring of Combat, this now Hoosier Fight Club, you know, everything is coming up. You know, I don't like to stay around the local area because then you're really not getting noticed unless it's a smaller town. Like, you know, Chicago is huge. Like, Chicago's MMA base is enormous right now, you know, and it's blowing up. But there's not too many guys from Chicago who are in the UFC. And if they do come out of Chicago, they go somewhere else, you know. Clay Guida, we got Bilal, a couple other guys, and like they don't want to have their home base still be here. Like, I'm not going anywhere. I've been telling everyone, like, what I'm doing now is working, obviously, right?
That's right.
You know, so right, you know, I don't think that I have to change anything. You know, maybe just try my best to train a little harder, or, you know, get a couple more high-level guys in my gym, which when I get this UFC contract, I know that our gym is going to blow up. Everyone's going to know who Top Notch is. You know, we have a great local circuit, you know, and we always travel. We're Ohio, Tennessee. We've been to Puerto Rico, New Jersey, Las Vegas. Our team has been everywhere, you know. So I think it's very important for these professional guys to really get out of their element, you know. Get out of your comfort zone. Be comfortable being uncomfortable.
Do you think?
You know, it's like.
Go ahead.
Because, you know, and that's what it is. Like, I've been to the East Coast so much for Ring of Combat, and at first I was like their feeder. You know, I was like, yo, this kid's tough. He's got an okay record, and we're going to bring him in for you to beat. That's pretty much what they were doing to me for. I don't even know how many fights. And then I turned that corner that we talked about, and then I won. And then they started giving me their hometown guys. Like, I was getting booed. Like, they'd say the other guy's name, and this whole place would just erupt. And I'd be like, oh, my God, are you kidding me? Like, are you serious? And then they'd say my name, and they'd be like, cricket, cricket, cricket. But that, at first, it would bother me. But then even when I won that Ring of Combat championship, they would say that hometown guy's name, place would erupt. They would say my name, being the champion, it'd be quiet. But I was like, all right, hey, it's all right. I'm a champion for a reason. I'm about to show these guys. And by the end of the fights, you know, everyone's like, yeah, Shante, yeah, Chicago, Chicago. You know, so that's great, man.
Do you think that's all Chicago's waiting for, is that one gym to kind of take claim to being on the level of a, you know, American top team or Team Alpha Male or Jackson Wink or Rufus Sport even?
Yeah, you know, you got all those gyms that you just named. They have so many guys in the UFC. It's because they're big and they have quote unquote everything that you need there at the gym, you know. But I have everything that I need at Top Notch. We might not be the biggest gym, you know, but we produce quality. We got quality trainers. We got quality guys. These up and comers that we got coming up under me and Lamas are killers, man. Mm. You know, they got solid records. They've already fought. You know, I got a couple guys who already fought for Bellator, CES out on the East Coast, Ring of Combat. You know, still the high level shows, being so young in their career. You know, so once I get this going for this UFC, man, I might not move Top Notch, but I think we'll expand a little bit. You know, make the gym just a little bit bigger. So we can actually house more high level guys that want to come in and train with us, you know. But you know, we come from humble beginnings, man, over there at Top Notch. So, you know, yeah, we might not have the biggest gym, like I said, but you know, we work hard with what we have there, and our trainers are great. Mac, the owner and head trainer at Top Notch, and then I go for my jiu-jitsu with Jason, like I said. Our boxing coach is great. We have a great boxing coach in Ricardo Luna. So, you know, yeah, these other big gyms, like, yeah, they, you know, they might have all the quality guys, but, you know, that's all right. That's fine with me. I just want to, you know, show that just because I do come from not that big name of a gym yet, that we can still hang with the best in the world, man.
We can't wait to see you show that again, brother. Mike, we'll let you go now, but we got Mike Santiago. He's fighting August 22nd next. It's been way too long since he's been in the ring. He's taking his really impressive win streak to the UFC Fight Pass, Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. Mike, we're looking forward to talking with you again after the fight, brother. Best of luck.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Take care. Man, what a lot of weight to put on your shoulders, man. It's your biggest opportunity. And he's thinking about lifting his team's, profile up, his team's identity up as well. Like, I want to make it bigger. Everything to, like, sounding even, like, physically the location bigger and, like, do things. I mean, that says a lot about the type of fighter he is. He's trained with this team his whole career. He's very loyal to them. And now on the eve of his biggest opportunity, like you call it, the biggest job interview of his life, he's still thinking about his team and lifting them up and getting them credit. That's pretty awesome.
You know, he talks about Chicago MMA and people leaving a lot, and I think that's really an interesting point. You know, so many of the big MMA gyms aren't necessarily in big cities. Mm. You know, Albuquerque, Sacramento's a decent-sized city, but it's not a Chicago or New York or LA. There's a lot of gyms with a lot of notable fighters in Southern California. But it's kind of been interesting to see that Chicago doesn't have more of a stake in that kind of national acclaim. You know, wrestling is such a big thing in the Midwest that you think there'd be a bigger presence. And he mentioned a lot of fighters leaving. And there's a lot of UFC fighters that are based in Chicago or are from Chicago. Jose Shorty Torres, we talked about. Curtis Blaydes, UFC heavyweight. Yair Rodriguez trains in Chicago. You remember Mike Biggie Rhodes is a guy in nearby. Clay Guida, Ricardo Lamas, people like this, you know. So it's interesting to see, like, you know, you talk about him putting all this weight on his shoulder, but it's interesting to see if he can be part of that catalyst to kind of make Chicago more of a staple for MMA.
Yeah, it's a lot to take on, and it's interesting because I mean, so many elite fighters come from the area and came up in the area. Will Brooks was at MTC for a lot of years, and he went down. I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of moving pieces. The talent is here. I think a lot of the teaching is here, where people are learning to become great fighters. But then there's not a lot of organization, and there's not a lot of size. Because one of the biggest things that fighters always want, what they makes them most nervous is not having enough bodies at a certain level. And they get worried about not having enough people in their division at an elite level. Like, how can I compete? If I'm competing against someone who's from American Top Team who has 20 people in Bellator UFC in their weight division every day to work with, how can I compete with that? So that's kind of tough. It's kind of tough. I think physical size in terms of gyms in Chicago have a lot of times been limited. It's expensive to be here. Some suburban places have had it. But there's, yeah, it's an interesting thing. I mean, listen, New York.
There's a lot of
New
gyms.
York and Jersey and L.A. are huge cities, and they have, you know, their epicenters. But other than that, you're right. It's like places with particular histories. Albuquerque has been a fight town forever. I don't exactly know why, but it has been, right? Or a little place like Coconut Creek. Like, you're right. It's not just because you have the talent pool. Because those places that are out of the way, they recruit from everywhere else if they've got that. They've got that organization.
So it's interesting to see, though, you know, and as we sit here, we keep thinking about more Chicago-based fighter Felice Herrig, Currens.
Yeah. And she still trains in the area, right?
Yeah, out in Crystal Lake, the suburbs, like you mentioned. But
Miguel Torres is a world champion out of here. You know, he never moved out until after he was world champion. So, but there's just not, like, there's not huge squads. There's great elite fighters. There's just not huge squads with, like, there's no one in the Chicago area with 20
so
people
many
on
gyms.
The roster. There are, yeah. There are a lot of gyms. And there's a lot of gyms everywhere, but there's been a few places that, like, I mean, even you know, we had Kaylin Curran on, and I don't know, it's kind of slipped by. We didn't talk about it. She was training out of Southern California. She talked to us about moving from Hawaii to Orange County, and she said something interesting. I don't know if people even caught it. She said it's hard. She talked about Rain Training Center, Mark Munoz's gym, when he closed that up and having to find some place, ending up at Ruka, and I'm sure she trains a lot of different places. She said it's hard. There's not pretty closely quoting this, to paraphrase, like, it's hard to find MMA gyms here. She's saying that about Orange County. She's saying that between LA and San Diego, it's hard to find MMA gyms. You and I and the rest of the world talk about that as epicenter. But even there, there's few one-stop shop huge places. Black House.
Right.
Black House is a small private gym with elite people, and they go and they'll work at Sykeson's Muay Thai or Eddie Bravo's 10th Planet, like Alan Joban does, and they'll, you know, or like Kevin Casey goes and teaches and trains with Henry Akins for jiu-jitsu. Like, they still piece things together. It's kind of crazy. There's really only a few places that are large enough to be one-stop shops if you think about it in the world. Chicago doesn't have any one of them right now. There's American Top Team. There's Jackson Wink. Hensel Gracie, you know, huge academy, I guess, in New York. Montreal has TriStar. But you're right, Chicago's not one of them yet. It's going to take a lot of things. It's going to take stars, but we've had stars. It's going to take stars staying there, like Santi was kind of saying, sticking around to build it, to grow. Like, this is going to be a bigger facility. I'm going to be here so people want to train with me so they can train with a UFC fighter. Like, it's going to take a lot of that. And that's hard to do. It's hard to do when Muscle Farm is giving you a salary just to, like, train in Colorado to stay. You know, like, it's tough to build. It takes a lot of things. It's fascinating, though.
Maybe Muscle Farm will show some love to Chicago.
Yeah, no, that would be great. That'd be great.
Well,
we'll take their money at Foundation MMA. They could come in.
Well, before we wrap up, is there anything coming from Flow Combat that everybody should check out from you?
Yeah, you know, I've got this forthcoming, at least in the next week, a piece with an not yet announced striking expert in our series there, Flow Combat, breaking down the Floyd Mayweather Conor McGregor boxing match, and I've got a kind of a longer report that I'm working on at mixedmartialarts.com about the regulation of this fight as well. I think there's some fascinating things that I've alluded to on the show. With the rule, with state code and federal law possibly being trampled on here, with this fight even existing, as it pertains to the role of manager and the role of promoter, and how they're not supposed to coexist under federal law in boxing and even under MMA in local Nevada code. So we got some stuff coming there and some other surprises, and we're hoping, Mike and I will hoping to hopefully soon announce a fun and studio guest coming up soon. We'll talk to you guys about that later. We're working on that. But yeah, that's it, man. How about you at Fanside? We got the awesome breakdown coming down for the fight.
Just the preview that we kind of already teased. We have a really cool a beginner's guide to hot takes
for fun.
Mayweather versus McGregor. So if you're wanting to get in and be able to spout off some talking points and real wild some people up at the sports bar when you're watching the fight, we got you covered.
That's awesome.
And Jose Youngs has been working on this for a long time, this timeline. Basically, since all this Mayweather McGregor stuff, he's been chronicling like everything that's happened.
That's
a timeline.
Cool.
So if you haven't been paying attention and you want to, you can catch up real fast before you rile everybody up with those hot takes. But as always, thank you for tuning in and watching on the Sports Illustrated MMA Facebook page. And if you're listening on the podcast, and if you're watching and you want to listen later on the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Blog Talk, anywhere that you can find the podcast. We also upload the videos of the interviews to YouTube if you want to check those out too. You can find us anywhere just about. So thank you everyone for tuning in. We will see you next week for Mayweather McGregor. Oh my God, I can't believe it's here. Finally, we can put this in the rearview mirror. So thank you everyone. We'll see you next week.